I would like to mention how NOAA doesn't want to submit their emails, even though they've been subpoenaed, and suddenly government subpoenas don't mean anything. Because Hillary doesn't want to...
Yeah.
What was the NOAA stuff? Is that the Ocean Administration?
Yeah. NOAA.
Shit went down with the ocean?
It's going down right now. There's a Republican...
It's like I saw that there was a thing about email, but I was like, what was she emailing about the ocean about?
There's a Republican who's calling Senate hearings on NOAA's latest findings. And, of course, the Republican has been being painted as, you don't believe in science. And he's saying, well, I want to know how you came about these findings. What was your methodology? I want to see your email traffic on the research. And we believe some of the data was doctored. And NOAA won't turn over any of their emails. Subpoenaed? Well, they've been subpoenaed.
I don't know that that's enough to compel them to do it.
But it's a legally binding request, right? If you get a subpoena, you better show up at court, or you're going to be held in contempt of court, and they're going to come and arrest you.
Well, so maybe NOAA thinks they have better lawyers. So
they do.
They're just going to push the Hillary stuff. You think there's Hillary emails?
Because she's been subpoenaed.
Seems like a reach.
How is that a reach? I'm talking about how certain entities within the government feel like, we don't have to honor this subpoena.
Right. So you don't think they're recovering it because they got a Hillary email in there?
No.
Okay.
Come on. Get on board here.
They were using the same server.
Yeah. So she had two hard drives. One was classified communications for the State Department. The other was
ocean-related
ocean data.
Climate change-related stuff.
I mean, come on, you talk about Republicans subpoenaing emails. Smacks of a Hillary.
I want to talk about how Rob admitted that he's really a conservative.
I think that's it. This might be the end. That's why it's a good time to spend a campaign.
Right.
I'm ready to turn to the dark side.
Time for you to come out.
It's fine. Fuck it.
Been trolling us this whole time.
For 4 years, he's been faking it.
And I've been telling, we'll go into it. I've been telling myself lots of little stories about why I'm still a liberal.
All right.
This Mizzou bullshit. It's your fucking alma mater, too. It's your fault.
I don't understand that at all.
Yeah, I'm pretty
Mizzou,
damn.
All of it.
The whole thing is just absolutely.
I'm pretty damn ashamed of all the.
Well, we'll get into it.
Yeah.
Did you see the video from there at the parade?
Yeah.
And did you see the Dartmouth video?
Dartmouth library thing. What was the parade one? Sorry.
It was
Dartmouth
the whole thing at Mizzou where they accused the president of running into students.
Because they were protesting the homecoming parade. So they were standing across the street. And the chancellor's in his convertible, right? And the driver's pulling up to the protesters. And then at some point he says, well, fuck this. I'm not going to hit him. And he puts it in reverse and starts backing up. But just as he's backing up, the guy goes on the hunger strike later. He walks up to the car, and basically hits the car with his leg and then claims that the car hit him.
Like the Russian, you ever see those Russian dash cam insurance fraud guys? Yeah. They like run up to it.
That's pretty much what it was like. I mean, it wasn't quite that blatant. The president's car, or the chancellor's car, sat there for a long time, just like, okay, letting him do that. They weren't even near.
Right.
People weren't near each other. There was plenty of room. And then he backs up, and then they walk towards him some more, and then he backs up some more. And it's just like, this, what do you,
I knew
you didn't get hit by a car. You laid on a car.
You leaned up against a bumper.
That's a little bit like your brother's in the back seat. Like, he's not touching me. Yeah. He's not touching me. And then you remember, oh, he hit me.
Oh. Yes.
All right. So, do we have enough to roll with?
Yeah.
Yeah, we can take a little break, do some shots. Hop back in.
All right. Here we go. This week, we bid adieu to you and you and you. Welcome to the Midwest Peace Process.
Absurd, like a bird. popping up to say
welcome to episode 89. Today is November 18th, 2015. I'm Jerry.
I'm Jeremy, and I didn't understand that intro.
It's because he's never seen The Sound of Music.
That's right. I'm Rob, and I'm well-versed in musical theater.
You didn't say this is Rob. You're changing it up.
Change it up.
Oh, man.
We're changing quite a few things up. This is our last episode, sadly.
For now.
Endorsements have run out. We have to close up shop.
That's right. our sponsors have all left us, and we can't keep this operation running. So
we can always start up again, right?
Yeah.
And yes, for you listeners out there, send us a little feedback, right? Say goodbye to us.
Good riddance.
Hey. That's right.
Yeah. Damn, it's about time you guys
right.
quit.
I didn't know you were still doing this.
Clogging up my phone with this automatic download. What am I going to do with all this free space now?
Yeah, it's been a little over 4 years since we started this podcast. August of 2011.
Holy moly.
Yeah.
It's a long time.
Jeremy joined us, September, October of... 2011.
Really?
Before that, we had some other guy that I won't mention.
Yeah, he didn't really matter.
Yeah.
He's
screw that guy.
Lied a lot, probably.
He's like the first drummer in Rush.
That's right.
You know, he was on the first album, but nobody quite remembers. That's it was right. John Rutsey, by the way.
All right. There's your trivia for this episode. So we're going to talk about, I don't know, a couple of things that have been in the news lately, but we're also going to try to do a little retrospective of the ground we've covered over the last 4 years. So let's start with the topic that I know Rob is just dying to talk about. All of the nonsense that's been going on at the University of Missouri the past few weeks.
Nonsense? Wow, you're really...
Oh my God, I'm so embarrassed to be an alumnus from Mizzou right now. It's terrible. They've given the university a black eye, I think.
So what? There are people who obviously feel it's a legitimate protest, and why do you feel it's
well,
not?
Well, so, you know, I actually tweeted at the Concerned Students 1950 and said, you know, normally we'd be on board with this, but, you know, it's been completely... co-opted. I mean, I was talking to some other people about it because they asked me, you know, well, what do you think about all the stuff going on in Mizzou? And I'm like, well, it's a lot like Ferguson, really. In my eyes, it's a bunch of people that are pissed off, but they don't know exactly what they're pissed off about, and they don't really know how to channel their energy.
Yeah. I'll take another Big Benny.
I'm good, thanks. Anyway, that was my... You know, just kind of at first glance, that's the way it struck me. It was just a lot of people pissed off about different things. They just all happened to be on the same campus together and managed to, you know, coalesce into a group that I don't believe had a whole lot of cohesion. They were all protesting different things.
They did end up having T-shirts made, though.
That's so good.
I disagree. I don't know. Now I'm mad somehow.
Oh, my God.
I thought I was going to agree, but now I'm mad. Yeah, my overarching feeling, first of all, I think it was completely not like Ferguson. Ferguson was set off by this Mike Brown incident, and you know, you had dead guy in the street for the long time, and then the cops try to smooth it over by showing a video of the where he knocked over the convenience store for the Swisher Sweets, which is, I mean, there's a lot of stuff to talk about there, and as the Ferguson
commission and the protesters got organized, they were able to produce a list of things they wanted: body cameras, you know, more whatever it was, right. You know, and they had a list that they could actually talk to and they could actually be worked from.
Concerned Students 1950 has a list of demands.
Right. I have not seen the list.
Oh, you haven't?
Priceless.
Oh, yeah. It's a great list.
Yeah.
I mean, the first on the list was the chancellor has to resign, right?
Right.
And he has to publicly apologize for running over one of the students in his car, which he didn't happen.
Right.
There's video evidence of that. And the other thing was he has to admit his white privilege, which there are a few phrases I'm tired of hearing. That's one of them.
I like the phrase, actually.
Yeah, well, it's your privilege. Right?
It's my privilege. So, right, so let's compare and contrast the Ferguson stuff. I mean, I think like some of the demands of the Ferguson stuff, like look what came out of the Ferguson protest. If there weren't all the riots and all the drama, we wouldn't have gotten all these statistics about the way communities have governments and small communities have gained revenue from fines and all of that stuff. ProPublica reporting the whole thing.
I totally agree that was valid. And
right, and that's a valid complaint. That's a completely different complaint than we need this chancellor to resign. What is the chancellor resigning going to do for anything? Maybe they don't know how the power structure of the world works.
Let's back it up one first. There was, I mean, this all started months ago with a complaint that somebody was driving their truck on campus and yelled a racial slur at the student body president, who happens to be black and homosexual. And, you know,
to me right there, I shouldn't say it ends the protest, but you're the president of the student body, and those are a couple of factors that may, if you have a more closed-minded student body, is going to eliminate you from the running.
Right, exactly. You would never make it.
I don't understand.
But I mean, I saw a lot of people posting on Facebook and Twitter saying stuff like, somebody said something mean to me, I'm going to go ask the mayor to resign. You know, it's similarly absurd in my mind.
And maybe maybe I'm back to my liberal self. I'm completely sensitive to the idea if you keep coming with complaints and say, hey, we got a problem on this campus with the way you guys are handling some harassment, they're like, boys will be boys, you know.
And
you know,
I agree with that.
But I don't
believe there's any evidence.
No,
that
I've never
occurred.
Seen that case be made, you know. You have to say that case is being made, that this guy, here's these five incidents that this guy did nothing with, you know, and there's a pattern. But I think they're just mad and they just want this guy to, you know.
Right.
I like what I was saying about the world. I mean, maybe I'm just naive and old, or crusty and old, not naive. I mean, how is the university administration power structure work in the country? You have it's a lot like the CEO merry-go-round that happens, as I understand it.
It is.
You become the chancellor of somewhere, and then you know, as you move on, you're just a chancellor at the other university, and they all just rotate around. You think this guy's like, oh no, I don't get to I don't get to guide this campus through its turmoil. Like, sweet,
I'll resign. Football coach. He gets fired from one team, he's hired by
right and you know, he gets his little golden parachute, he gets the rest of the year off, and he goes to University of Arkansas.
But why was the chancellor accountable for any of this? That's the question.
They never
no one has ever answered for me sufficiently. I mean, how is he responsible for what some redneck racist bigot says, yelling out the window of his truck as he's driving across
unless
campus?
Unless they keep bringing this issue up and he's just not doing anything about it, but they never demonstrated that. It's another thing different from Ferguson. Why are they mad at the cops? Well, here, they can provide you a list of the reasons why they're mad at the cops, you know? But why are they mad at this chancellor guy, you know?
So the second thing they complained about was the poop swastika.
Right. The famous. It's great just to have those two words. Those two words are almost.
That's an awesome hashtag, if nothing else.
I see that in a totally different light. I see that as somebody making fun of a swastika, because if I have an emblem and somebody makes that emblem out of poop, like, well, screw you. You just.
Right.
You just made fun of my emblem. So.
Well, I often think, to make one, you got to get some poop on you, don't you?
Yeah.
I mean, you can't make a poop swastika. We get a little.
Took a lot of forethought if they didn't.
Yeah, it's kind of like, we eat pieces of shit like you for breakfast. You eat pieces of shit.
And then
I guess another thing that goes with it is I got an email from my brother who likes himself a little chainmail.
And I was fascinated by the email itself that he wrote. He's like, it looks like, you know, it was a picture of, it was like Mizzou Tiger, and there used to be a tiger, and then like there was a whiny crybaby, and it said like PC crybabies or something. And it was like, looks like the Democrats or the liberals have taken over Mizzou or whatever. So there's two things there. One, I don't even know if this is really a liberal thing. To me, this is what I've telling myself to try to keep my liberal self going. I don't know if this protest thing even really qualifies as a liberal thing.
Really?
Yeah, to me. I think it's...
You're wrong.
and I'm struggling with this, because I know a number of conservatives that have trouble with this. That they know liberals are stupid, and they know stupid when they see it. So the two things have to be equated. Like, so, you know, and I guess... Or if people do stupid things and they're liberal, it must be because they're... You know, that must be the liberal causation of the dumbness. But this is more just, it doesn't even seem like a liberal conservative. It just seems more like stupid. It seems not well thought out. It doesn't seem like there was a real direction to what they were really aiming for success or why. And, you know, I mean, maybe like you guys would be like, sounds like a Democratic president or whatever, you know. But it's not, that's not a liberal agenda about social structures and strife. And, you know, that's just, it's like a, argument of stupidity. And I don't think it's PC either, because to call it PC, you know, and I know, like, for a conservative, just anything goofy on a campus is PC. That's like the shorthand for it. But if you call it PC, it's almost like you're defending the right for somebody to make a poop swastika, you know, like, hey, I can do this, you know, you can't infringe on my rights, you know,
right?
Because PC is a, you know what, to me it's a shorthand for being overly sensitive about language or something.
Well, if the real, as long as I don't deface public property, I mean that.
You could always make a private poop swastika in your home.
Yeah,
take a picture, selfie with it.
Right, it's stupid. I wouldn't do it, but I can't be arrested just for doing that.
So I don't even. To me, it was just like,
So just to pull on that a little bit.
Oh, pull on that thread.
He's right from academia.
Thing, yep.
You have the First Amendment right to make a poop swastika.
Right.
But you don't have the First Amendment right to videotape the protesters on their campsite.
That's right. And a journalism assistant professor even backed that up.
And that's probably when the whole... Like, I was trying to figure out, like, when the Ferguson thing happened, I was like, what happened with this Mike Brown guy? I wanted to find out what was all going on. You know, with this, I was like, I mean, as it was all going, I couldn't tell what the heck the whole thing was about, really.
Yeah.
You know, and then,
and the narrative kept changing.
Yeah, and it just completely went crazy when the media that this is our safe space. We're going to create a safe space in the public university quad.
Right.
And please, this is our safe space for our babies.
Right. What? And I need some muscle over here to remove the media.
Yeah. That went away awfully quickly and quietly.
What do you mean?
Didn't hear much more about her.
I think they basically kicked out the two. The one was like a Greek life coordinator, right? And the other one was like a assistant professor or something.
No, she was a professor of mass media,
right?
In the communications department, but she had some kind of honorary appointment to the J school, which she dissolved following the controversy. Because
right, I think she got kind of canned
because somebody at the J school called her and said, you no longer work for us."
And then there was a lady in the front of the video that was, I think, was a Greek life coordinator.
I think I read that too.
And she got that kicked out too. I think they both got canned pretty much.
I think that points to the lack of coordination or the thought out argument, because if you are a professor of mass media, I would think that would be so ingrained in you of the rights that people have.
Right.
And you just got so caught up in this and that you're willing to just trash your career over
that. Exactly. How does a professor of mass media not know, number one, she's being videotaped?
Right.
So, I mean, other people are going to see what she's doing and saying. And, and there's this thing called the internet. Have you heard of it?
Right, yeah. And it wasn't mass media. I think it was social media, wasn't it?
It was mass media.
It's just...
So, I just, you know, the level of naivete is staggering in that whole exchange, right? That she thought she was going to be able to do this and nobody was going to find out about it.
Right.
It's just...
And the students who were there also shouting down...
You lost this one, bro.
Yeah.
You lost like, this one, like, bro. I would say that in the podcast all the time. Just say you lost this one, bro.
Like, do you, you're using these rights, but you're denying that right to this person. Do you not see that? You know, do you not?
And I think if you have a protest, if you have a protest that has a real purpose and a meaning, if you're Martin Luther King or whatever, you welcome all press. You want to get your message out about,
right.
Hey, I got
and
a grief here.
They did originally. They were asking.
Right. Yeah, you want, I mean, this is when you know, oh, you want to, like you want to talk to me? I'll give you my 10 biggest grievances. I'm trying to get it out there. Come talk to me. Take a picture, you know?
Right.
But if you don't have anything to say and you want a little healing space, that's when you're like, no, this is our healing space. I mean.
So, okay, let's talk about the hunger striker for a minute.
I'm glad you brought that up.
Because, I mean, as we peel this onion, this is the juiciest layer of the onion, right?
This is
the same guy.
The dumbest layer of the onion.
That claimed he got hit by the chancellor's car, right? He's a grad student. Been at Mizzou for 6 or 8 years. I forget what it was.
A lot of people go to school for 8 years.
But he was... He was complaining about the fact that he had lost his medical benefits as a PhD student.
Okay.
Right? And, you know, hashtag thanks Obama, right? Because that was a result of Obamacare.
Yeah.
And changes that the university had made in reaction to that. They eliminated that benefit for their PhD students. At least that's what I read. The PhD were the only ones affected. The master's still had theirs, I think. I don't know.
I didn't read
that. I could have been wrong about that.
It's affordable now, so he can buy his own.
Exactly. So he's protesting this. He decides to go on a hunger strike. Okay, so I can get behind that if he hadn't already perjured himself, you know, with the whole...
Right. I can't get behind that because I don't understand hunger strikes.
Well, it was just to draw attention to the issue. Okay,
it worked,
right?
Well, that's your answer about why you understand.
But here's strikes. The problem, right? I mean, all of his credibility was gone as soon as, you know, it became public knowledge that his dad is an executive at what is it, Union Pacific Railroad?
Yes.
Making $6 million a year or something. I mean,
right.
You want to talk about white privilege? He's got the privilege, just not the white part.
Right, right.
And yet, he's complaining that his health care has gone up and he can't afford it.
Right.
And yet, he's a grad student. He's been there how many years now?
Right.
And dad can help pay for it.
But dad's got it.
Right. I don't know. It was all very hypocritical and completely destroyed any credibility that this guy had.
It's like stop the world. I want to get off, man. It's just...
Well, the protester in the... homecoming parade when they got hit by the car. I'm sorry. They're wearing t-shirts and on the back it said built on my and it the word said black, the L was in quotes, so it was built on my back. They were talking about they gave a little history lesson, which was very condescending. I think that's part of the issue I have with the protests is they kept saying to the crowd, we're going to educate you. We're going to educate you. Like, no, I don't think you are. I don't think you are. This is... But they were talking about the history of the university, and... It seemed really... I don't even know the word, but built on their back? No.
Yeah, right. Built
no,
on...
Maybe
your grandfather's.
Generations ago.
Or, yeah.
But you're here now. You're getting an there's an education available to
right,
you
right.
that wasn't for
right
many yeah. years
right. right from 1839 from 1839 right. to you know whatever 1960
right.
something
so and if it's so horrible why are you there I don't that's the piece I don't anytime I've been somewhere I'm like boy this really sucks I think I'm gonna get out of here
right
yeah
I don't. Maybe that's the wrong attitude. Maybe I have the wrong attitude.
And it seems like I just have this idealized, idea of especially undergraduate education. You got these young, like 19 to 23 year olds. Like that's the time to talk it out. Like whatever your issues are, like it's time to share all your ideas. Like not I'm going to go educate you or I'm going to go. I mean, it's like. I mean, you got time to talk. You got people all around you. You know, like. Like, that's where it should happen.
Right.
I don't know. just...
So, they installed somebody new.
And we got it. We have
any feelings about...
It's just another one in there. I mean, it's
another one.
I think, what's to stop them from just scalping that guy next?
Well, right? They're not going to scalp him.
Well, not immediately.
Well, he has the right qualifications, though.
Well, yeah, but I'm just saying, if he doesn't deliver on the promise, you know, implied or not, right, if he doesn't deliver on it.
But he has...
Right. Anyway, we're all agreeing too much, and now we just sound like crabby old men at the First Watch Diner.
I am a crabby old man.
You are. You're coming into your own.
Been that way since I was 15.
But you look marvelous.
Maybe one of the most, maybe the most positive or uplifting or interesting thing, the football team's involvement in the whole thing.
Uplifting?
I don't know about uplifting.
Disagree.
I think it set a dangerous precedent because now football teams on college campuses all across the country are going to be able to hold their universities hostage,
right,
and make whatever silly demands they want.
It was right, and this was a particularly silly demand, but it seems like these football teams are. I don't know. It seems at least the students, I feel, at the big football schools and the big basketball schools are kind of getting a raw deal out of the whole thing. Like, oh, we're paying for your education, and just like the numbers don't add up for what that brings to the coach, that whole thing.
I have no problem with them. You know, if they had decided to strike because they wanted to be paid,
right?
I could have got behind that.
Right, but this may have opened the door for that kind of thing.
But to strike because of this list of demands hadn't been met.
Yeah, so it was I don't know, uplifting. It was more, I don't know, it was positive and interesting just to think of it, that the balance of power between the football team and the administration. Like, we always know that the administrators kind of work for the sports teams. I was at my alma mater, Indiana University, when the whole Bob Knight controversy was going on with Miles Brand, the late Miles Brand, now sad. But you know, he had to. I mean, his professors, the faculty were starting to revolt against him and revolt against Bob Knight. You know, and it was just all coming to a head, and he had to decide, like, am I really going to do this? And I feel like that power struggle, like Ed O'Bannon, I don't know why I know his name. Remember Ed O'Bannon at UCLA?
I remember the name, but right. I couldn't tell you
anyway,
anything about it.
He's the lead guy on the lawsuit that wants to be able to get paid for use of their image.
Yeah.
On like sports games.
Right,
and that
I've read about
thing.
That.
Right. Because he's in Northwestern.
Because his image is in Madden.
Right, right. Yeah. It was like Madden 82. Whenever, I don't know. I don't. He was a basketball player, so it was some game way back then. But he's leading the fight. I mean, he doesn't care about his NCAA 1998 or whatever it was. But he's trying to get that all going to have college athletes be. I don't know. I feel like we're starting to break down the charade of the student athlete and that little lie we tell ourselves.
Yeah. Okay.
So that was it. That was good.
I would like a Jack and Seven, please.
Jack and Seven.
I'm good.
All set. Yeah,
thanks. Thank you. You're
welcome. I don't know. Now I'm just grumpy. Would you characterize? Tell me the protest was not a liberal protest.
It was a liberal protest.
I think it was liberals protesting.
Okay.
I'm not sure that the protest was liberal at its core.
Right. It was stupid liberals doing stupid things, maybe not.
My view, it was remarkably liberal.
Okay. Only because it occurred on a college campus.
No, because they were making unreasonable demands and they wanted it their way, but when you use their same rules on them, they said that's not fair.
Well,
that's
yeah.
why it was remarkably liberal to me.
Yeah, in that sense.
And I guess I had
what
a
do you
feeling.
Think?
Andrea, we have to bid you farewell. This is our last podcast.
Why?
Yeah.
quit waiting on us. You never gave us a free beer. You never did.
We had to show up. We had to show up on Wednesday. We're very busy.
Yeah.
Is there just other stuff going on in y'all's lives? Yeah.
Yeah.
Aww, it's no fun. It is fun. I don't want to say it's no fun, but it's kind
of
sad.
End of an era.
Yeah. That's so really sad. What am I going to do? Are y'all going to still come in though?
Probably the
same
thing you were
doing. We may come in once in a while.
Yeah.
We just won't record anymore.
Yep. Well, at least when it's me, so I never ever see anybody.
I was in Saturday night. You weren't here.
No, every time I see you, I'm always really busy. Mm. I don't particularly like bartenders on the weekends, but they don't have enough bartenders. Like, four bartenders. People keep quitting.
You ought to protest.
Stuck. Yeah, I know, right? Get me out of here.
Protest of one. Hunger strike.
I wish I could do that. I can't. I'll be hangry.
Hangry.
Oh. All right, well, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we may cover this some more and move on to something else. And
yeah, I think we should. I think we should talk about, Mizzou had been in the news over the last couple of years about sexual assaults on campus and how not much was being done, and maybe that's, I don't want to say more important, but a little bit more tangible.
Yeah.
And where did that go? That's been overshadowed.
Yeah.
You want to complain about, well, they didn't really complain about Paris overshadowing them. That was people not related to the protest. Every single one was not anybody who was in the protest.
So. Yeah. All right. So we'll be back in just a moment. Stay with us.
So long, farewell. Our leaders say adieu.
Adieu, adieu to you and you and you.
So long, farewell, au revoir, I'll be the same.
I'd like to stay and taste my first champagne.
So long, farewell, I'll be the same goodbye.
I leave and heave a sigh and say goodbye.
Like you could say what, you know, and being an IU was a, you're in kind of like the Southern Indiana kind of cracker belt, you know, a little bit. But yeah, we could talk about what those campuses were like for us, I guess.
All right.
All right. And then we'll go into France then.
All right. You ready?
Born ready.
All right. We are back. And Jeremy would like to lead us in a discussion of rape.
No.
Whoa.
That is not what I said. No, I just, interesting is not the right word, but it was peculiar to me that over the last couple of years I've seen coverage about the issue of sexual assaults on campus at Mizzou. It's been on, I've seen news stories on Channel 5. I know some of the alumni, they've posted things on Facebook about it. I don't know anybody who's been assaulted, but it was, it seemed like they were bringing a legitimate problem to light. Some of it involved the sports teams. There was a girl who committed suicide, and I think that probably started, that's when it gathered some steam. This girl committed suicide. She had been assaulted by, I don't remember if it was basketball or football player. And it's, some would say that led her to suicide. Now, I can't speak to that at all. But the media coverage and the discussions about it seemed to be methodical and like they were trying to address a real issue, a very important issue also. And all of a sudden, this issue of racism on Mizzou's campus just exploded.
Yeah.
And I saw no real origin of it. It wasn't covered in the same way. It was covered in what I would consider hype, fashion of a lot of hype. And there was no mention of, we have this issue of racism and we have this issue of sexual assaults going on campus. There are major problems on campus. Let's tackle these things and come up with solutions. And it's, I can't say that one is more important than the other. I've not experienced either of them on any kind of basis that would impact my life.
Yeah.
But I was a little bit puzzled by when I realized that issue was way overshadowed by the latest protest at Mizzou. And if I were on the other side of that, I think I would have major problems with how this had preempted something that was getting a little bit of attention that it certainly needed.
Yeah.
I don't know that much. Yeah.
I was a little surprised, you know, after I saw the video of the protests during the homecoming parade.
Yes.
You know, I was a little surprised that these protests had been going on that long, right? Because homecoming was like the second weekend in October.
Yeah.
And, you know, all of this, none of this hit the national stage until the football team decided to go on strike, right? That was the story that kind of drew everyone's attention to it. It was like, whoa, wait a minute, what's going on here?
And then you start getting the backstory, and I think that points to what Rob was saying a minute ago.
Right. It had been going on for weeks, maybe longer. I don't know. I've been gone long enough, I don't really have any contacts left on campus. So I don't know how long it had actually been going on. So it's possible that, you know, since the beginning of the school year in August, there have been incidents, and it's just been building more and more, you know. I don't know. But I can't say that I've seen a whole lot of coverage of the sexual assault issue either, though. So
prior to the... Okay.
Yeah.
I distinctly remember seeing stories, more than one, and maybe more than one is only two, so not
was,
anything.
Was there a sense that there was anything uniquely Mizzou about it, or
no?
No, because I mean, there's a problem whipping around. There's a problem whipping around all sorts of campuses.
We may be done.
Oh, batteries.
Yeah,
we can run over to Deerberg's and get it. I can run over and get batteries.
I thought you were going to get your battery out of your watch. That's what I thought you were going to do. Got one right here. Here's a little.
Man, I just charged these. They must
How
be
How many
bad.
Do you need?
Six.
Okay.
Alright, so it wouldn't be the MPP if we didn't have technical difficulties in the middle of an episode. Alright, what were we talking about before we were so rudely interrupted?
Talk about how the sexual assault cases got blown out of the media.
Yeah, and I had a thought while I was procuring batteries. I didn't see the football team or the basketball team saying, you know what, we're not going to play until these stop.
Right.
Yeah. That would have been pretty powerful.
That would have been pretty powerful.
And you know, that's the kind of, that's the shit I could have... You know, right. I would have been very proud of my alma mater or something like that had happened. Yeah.
But I don't have anything more to say about that. Much like Forrest Gump.
All right, Forrest.
You went on your big run to Deerberg's, and that was the thought you came back with.
That's what I came
with. I just kept running.
I just kept running. And there was one of those little grocery carts right out here, which is pretty far away. So I almost threw that in the bed of my truck and as I drove up. I was like, you know what? That's not important right now.
It's getting real in the Deerberg's parking lot.
Hey, I worked there for 6 years. It has
you know the deal with the little
shopping cart. Do they cheer for you when you show up? Do they do the slow clap?
Yeah. Champion bagger.
Champion bagger.
Most of them, when I go to the one where I work.
Was Dixie there?
I only see her at the other one.
Okay.
What's the secret to good bagging?
Building a house.
You build a house? Tell me how.
Build a house. What do you mean, tell you how?
I was trained once.
Kind of bag. It depends on the kind of bag, whether it's paper or plastic. Okay. It's a little bit different.
So, I'm talking about plastic here.
What's the secret? I had my own technique.
Let's hear it.
That's proprietary, man.
Yeah, you can't tell people.
Secrets of Deerberg's bagger.
I'll just tell you, the vast majority of the ones I run across do it incorrectly.
Well, how do you do it correctly then?
Well, you put the tall stuff in the middle and the short stuff on the sides for a plastic bag, because when you grab the handles, the sides close in.
But don't you want to put the boxy things on the outside? So
not
it makes, like,
in a plastic
structure?
Bag. Not in a plastic bag, because it doesn't work well then.
But it creates a little structure for when you grab the bin.
No,
you get a
Rob, you just asked me how to do it. I told you how to do it.
I think you're doing it wrong.
Saying, no, all right, we're done here, because Rob can't understand basic physics.
You put the Triscuits on the side and the vanilla wafers on the other side, and you put all the cans in the middle.
Okay, you just destroyed the bag and the groceries, because the cans are heavier than the boxes. So in a plastic bag, they're going to weigh down the middle and collapse the sides even more. Holding it. Look at a plastic bag.
Well, it's true, but I don't care about
plastic bag.
I don't care about the bend of my Triscuit box.
I care about the integrity. You're not making a nice structure. That's what I'm telling you.
It's a nice structure when I pick it up.
No, it's not. You're completely off the reservation on this. I can't even believe that you think that's how you would bag
that's
groceries.
How you do it right.
No, that's how you do it incorrectly.
Oh,
that
thank
is not
God I'm recording this.
To how I do it
That's
correctly.
How they taught me at the Price Chopper.
Well, that was Price Chopper, and that's why you don't see any of those around here, do you?
We can have our listeners weigh in.
Guess what?
I'm right.
I don't buy boxes that are wrinkled and creased when I see them on the shelf. And I don't get home with boxes that are...
I don't want the cans falling out because
they're
all
not,
on the outside. I want the cans to be in a little nice house, a little shelter.
Okay, you're again, you're...
Can we move on?
I'm right.
So, Rob, what have you learned in the last 4 years of this experiment other than you don't know how to... load a plastic bag.
Or I do now. I think I see pretty much almost every issue through a nice MPP lens, and I hope our listeners do as well. You know, to see a liberal side, a conservative side, especially an anarchist side. And
he doesn't see any of that, folks. He's lying right now.
I don't agree with it. I'm not saying I agree with everything. But it makes me think. Like I like to dig at poor Jerry here. You know, we got our ISIS who's. ISIS is out there not respecting borders and doing whatever it is they want to do, and everybody's trying to battle them. To me, it looks, you know, it's almost anarchy over there.
Yeah?
Yep. So that's a good example. I would have never thought of it before like that. And Jeremy, you've made me think about a few things.
I doubt that.
I would say you've sharpened my ability to see the absurdity of my own views in some senses, or especially my own party. How about that? My own party or political affiliation. You know,
let's pull on that thread a
little.
Let's
pull on that thread.
To use a trite corporate America term.
All right. I think more than Jerry, I think you're more able to point out hypocrisy of
BS meter as well too.
Right. Okay. And you know, not that I, you know, without you, I would think that the liberal philosophy is a beacon of truth or anything, you know, and even an internally consistent set of beliefs. But it's good to have, someone point out, I guess, the internal inconsistencies versus like, there's always going to be a Republican guy or a conservative that's going to be like, that's not freedom, or, you know, Sean Hannity yelling at you.
Right.
But it's always more effective if you could be like, but this doesn't even really, you know, you want to
do this program, but it doesn't work, or you want this to happen, but it's been shown this other thing. You know, that's always a little bit more effective than kind of, you know, just an ideological battle. So yes, your BS meter is finely tuned. I feel like mine's also, you know, it's
yours
also
needs a new set of batteries.
Go to the Deerberg, put it in a bag. Yes, very good on the podcast. Good job, boys.
Jeremy, what have you learned?
I have learned there is no hope.
Society is doomed.
We're all doomed. Might as well sell this equipment and buy liquor and certain internet site subscriptions. Because that's the only joy in the world. I've learned that Rob means well, but he's totally inaccurate with all of his actions in life, including bagging groceries. I agree. I will, and I'm not falling. See, Rob was trying to stroke my ego there.
I'm a healer,
or just a heel. But I'm not falling into the trap that Rob set by getting me to acquiesce a little bit because he said something nice. But what I will say is that Rob has sometimes pointed out that conservatives don't abide their own principles. And it's the same for liberals.
Right. Maybe that's what
we both come to that conclusion that hypocrisy abounds.
Yes.
Yes.
And I think I came in with that, and I'm not a true conservative, so that's the... But, Rob, this will sound like a slight on Rob. It's not. That was his go-to argument, and it usually worked. Jerry always made me see things in a different light, and I really noticed that when we had the Sue Meredith interview, because when I was talking to her or trying to show her that, but that was not your role. Why did you do that? That was a very Jerry-esque argument. Government had no business doing what you just did. So why do you think that's great? So, that's what I pulled out of it. And other than that, drink some beer or whatever else.
Yeah.
I think Jerry, you also provide the most entertaining arguments against conservatism that I can come up with, because nobody really wants to argue with the liberal guy about, you know, Social Security. Like, it's all played out. Like your conservative drunk uncle there. He's got his laundry list of, you know what happened in 1984? It's a played out argument,
right.
But if you hit them from the other side, you know, they either get real angry or, you know, they're like, that's just stupid. We need a democracy or whatever, you know. They just get all mad, but they get mad in a way that's different than the usual, like, well, Obama did it too, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
Just this tried and true, like, the well-worn path. You can kind of, like, poke and prod in a different way and get and especially for me have conservatives see their own views differently.
Roads diverged in a wood, and Jerry took the one less traveled by.
I took neither.
You just started running around in circles in the forest.
Yeah, I just blazed my own trail.
The one thing I remembered before Jerry gets
retrospective
was one time I had Rob on the ropes. I don't even remember what the topic was, but I had Rob on the ropes. I had just checkmated him in his own argument. It was beautiful. It was glorious. And Jerry says, all right, we're going to take a little break now. And as soon as he stopped the recording, he goes, yeah, Rob, Jeremy had you on that. Like, why did you stop? What? That was gold. That was a big chance. My shining moment. And
I am sorry I robbed you of your shining moment, man. Jeremy. I apologize.
One chance in life.
Thanks, Jerry.
Well, Jerry?
So what have I learned? we learned back in episode 7 or 8, whenever we took the world's shortest political quiz, and we discovered that we were all frauds, right? None of us are actually as far, you know, to the extreme as we think we are. We were all kind of libertarian in our thinking. That was one of the first things I learned, that, you know, when we pulled this together using a liberal and a conservative, we could have, I don't know, I should have held auditions, I guess, for the
it
liberal.
It could have been called a libertarian and a libertarian walk-in.
I think we've all done a fine job of, you know, articulating the message for our respective corners of that, you know, diamond. And, you know, some of the folks listening aren't going to know what I'm talking about, but go to the website, go back to, I think it's episode 7 when we took that quiz. I will say, I think I've learned the same thing you said, the society is doomed, right? I mean, because... I mean, we're three relatively intelligent guys, and we can sit here and debate these things, but, you know, we're not convincing each other, right? None of us have converted to one of the other's philosophies. We may have all come a little bit closer to a compromising area in the middle of where we were, but it's taken 4 years, right, for us to get there. So to think that we're going to be able to solve any of the serious problems that face our society by, you know, sound bites and candidates who are able to, you know, articulate their message on Twitter.
No.
That's not going to happen, no. Right? If we can spend 4 years debating these things and we still haven't been able to pull one another over the line to our own way of thinking, there's no way it could happen in sound bites. So if our salvation, I put that in quotes, if our salvation depends on convincing people that we're right, whoever we are, you know, if it's left or right, or, you know, the anarchist point of view, if our salvation depends on that, then we're screwed, right? Yeah. Where there's no way we're going to convince a majority of people to think one way over another.
Well, and under your tenets, we would have to convince not just a majority, but everybody.
Right, right. It'd have to be unanimous. So, I mean, I'm especially screwed.
Yeah.
But that's bleak.
Bleak? Well, that's true, Rob.
No.
You don't have.
That's right. You don't have to convince somebody to come over to their side.
Well,
and
you do in the current system. See, that's why I'm always advocating that we have to throw this system out and craft a new system that doesn't require that, doesn't require you to convince a majority of the other side and bring them over to your side.
So talk about why you think we're not doomed and why you don't have to do that.
Oh, I think we're doomed, but not for the reason you're talking about.
Oh, well, in that case. We pulled you over to our side. We both think we're doomed. Now you're doomed.
Yeah, I do think
at least
doomed.
We all agree
but
on
for,
that.
But for different reasons. I mean, I feel like it shows up in the primaries, and this primary is absolutely absurd, so I can't even say about this primary.
Yeah.
But, you know, at some point, like, and it comes, it's maybe it's phrased as the electability quotient, you know. Is this guy electable? I mean, the far right and the far left would love to put their guys up there. And, well, this guy would really fight for our thing. But it never really works out because you need to get some swath of the middle. Or you need to get some people like me in this next election that says, hey, I can't vote for Hillary. I just won't do it. And so the choice for me is either not vote at all or do I vote the Republican guy? Well, that question is whether it's, you know, maybe Donald Trump or Marco Rubio, right? Mm-hmm. Those are the change. Yeah. That's the question for me. Am I a Republican guy? Am I a conservative? No, but I can't vote for Hillary. And if it's Donald Trump's in there, I can't tick that box. I just can't do it, you know? But if it's a intelligent, well-meaning conservative Republican guy that I feel like is really trying to do what he thinks is right. Yeah, that's not going to kill me, you know. I'd rather Obama run again, you know. But it's
oh
not.
My god.
Well, he's old now. Maybe
holy.
How about
Rob?
How,
oh,
How about Michelle? Oh, can we have Michelle?
No.
Back?
Oh my
no.
God.
No, Rob.
Do you think Michelle will run?
Starting. You, see, he almost had me. I knew he was setting a trap.
A
that's why I was keeping it.
It's a rope.
Yeah, he's just tiring me out.
That's right. Dodging eight punches. Boom.
And then you come back. You want to bring Obama back.
I don't want to bring Obama back.
Because you just
believe,
said you do.
Because I believe,
he were on the,
because I believe in the Constitution.
Hashtag scare me in three words. Right. Obama's third term.
That's right.
You believe in the you know who doesn't believe in the Constitution? Barack Obama.
Oh, boy. Here we go. So
what
where was I going?
Rob.
So you have to.
Wherever you're going,
it's all you're doing. All you can do is breed understanding and pull people a little bit. And I think.
Inbreeding misunderstanding.
That might be as good as it gets. As far as why we're doomed, I think we're doomed for lots of different reasons. But yeah.
Has our democracy run its course? I mean, are we in the end days of this experiment?
Oh man.
I'll tell you my own personal feeling. And maybe we were all getting older, and like I said, crotchety old men. You know, it's not like it used to be. But there's something about this particular campaign that's just got me completely down in the dumps. And I went back and I thought about at the end
that's
of the Clinton.
Jim Webb suspended his campaign.
I love
that's,
Jim Webb.
I know that's why you're. Down in the
But if you think back to this, and this is me, like this is maybe just me just being a nostalgic old man. But you think when after Clinton's Monica Lewinsky scandal, which was awesome, Clinton was awesome. There was a lot to talk about Clinton, right? So W comes in as the kind of the anti-Clinton, and Gore gets in there, right? And it's like neck and neck, and you have Florida. How awesome was that, right?
Let's never rely on Florida for anything.
That's right. But
yeah,
how
oranges.
How amazing. I mean, W's a valid candidate. Gore's a vice president. Perfect. What a great, you know, battle that was. And neck and neck, you know? Then yeah. you have W. Kerry, and you have the swift boating, and like the onslaught of the attacking, the strength, you know, kind of thing going on. Like what a campaign that was, and Democrats kind of face-palming through the Kerry campaign. You know, it's kind of interesting, right? And then you have the Democratic rise, and you finally have, like, the Democrats finally have a candidate they can really believe in, you know? Like, it's pretty hard to canvass the neighborhood for John Kerry, you know? He's got a great chin. You know, it doesn't pump you up. But, you know,
we're still face-palming on him in his current role.
But for Obama, I mean, you remember the energy. And then who did he face? McCain Palin. How great is McCain Palin? That's just awesome.
It's not great.
It's just fantastic.
It's a sideshow.
Right, yeah. And then the Obama-Romney. I mean, that was a little bit like the second W term where the fact that he couldn't be unseated kind of validated, you know. And, I mean, those were great election cycles to just, I mean, you wanted to tune into the political radio, you wanted to watch Meet the Press, you wanted to see what was going on, what the strategies and the kind of the angles that were being played, and like the new scandals, and here's Mitt Romney with his 47%, and you know, all the little things that come up in a campaign. And now look at where we're at.
Yeah.
Look at where we're at. We got Trump and Carson leading the Republican ticket, and we got Hillary and Bernie. Like, are you serious?
Yeah.
I mean, that's just a poo storm to me of candidates. And nobody can break through. And
who would you have as your front runners if you could pick?
I mean, what would it have been like in the old days? I mean, we probably would have had a Biden. Biden would have been in there as a vice president, you know, in the old days.
Right. Well, he talked about it, but
right.
You know, that was just another sideshow. But I don't know. Where is this going? We haven't even talked about Paris.
We're not going to talk about Paris. I'm just saying, I feel like maybe, I don't think that's a reason for episode 89 farewell, but there's just this particular election cycle has just got me like, I mean, I can't get pumped up. I can't show up here every month and defend Hillary Clinton. That's not going to happen.
No,
it's pretty uninspiring.
I don't understand how she's still relevant. I just cannot fathom that. Can we get 3 Irish car bombs, please?
Yes. And it's a little bit like, yeah, I mean, the Republicans don't have their establishment. I mean, they don't have their
well, yeah, that was their establishment was Jeb Bush, and that was
a no-go.
It's interesting to me because for so many years he was saying, I'm not going to run. He was playing the game. I'm not going to run. Then he runs and doesn't even get out of the blocks,
right,
really.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it does bode well for my particular party, because I think the Republican side's gonna like destroy itself even more.
Yeah, well, they still don't get it, because every 2 weeks for a while, and then now it's every 2 months. I see a headline that says Republican Party scrambling, trying to bring Romney back. Like, no, that's not the answer, you morons.
Right.
Don't do that.
But there's, but
reanimating.
But I think
the
everybody's
dead body.
Everybody's trying to find this other. You know, they're looking at the Trump Carson and the Hillary Bernie. They're like, there's got to be somebody,
yeah,
right?
What are we doing?
There's somebody got to just rise from the ashes somehow.
Maybe. A couple of my favorite moments, if we're finished with that talk.
No, let's talk about that.
I cannot remember her name. I was going to go back through the episodes, but this lady who was here I don't remember, she just moved here, or she was on travel?
Vivian.
Yes. That was an experience. Vivian was an experience.
Yeah, I would encourage our listeners to check out Vivian on our YouTube channel. She's one of a kind.
She was one of a kind. I thought we hit the jackpot one night with... when Obamacare was about to get, what was it, about to get passed, or had it already been passed? I don't remember which, but a lady who came up was an insurance broker, health insurance broker.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, oh man, we hit a gold mine here. And she, I was completely confused by the numbers she was throwing out, because they meant nothing.
Right.
It didn't talk anything about Obamacare or any concerns that we had or questions we were asking. She was just throwing out percentages and numbers. That was it. That was a major disappointment to me.
Yeah.
And then the guy who wanted to help Jerry move. That was a glorious night. We had it was life imitates art, I guess you would say. We had just been talking about false authority figures and people who were anointed with some kind of empty power, exceeding the limits of their power. And this guy wanted to help Jerry move out of the United States because Jerry said it wasn't the best country in the world anymore.
Yeah.
And as he's walking away, he has a windbreaker or a shirt on, and it said security across the back of it.
Right. Yeah, it was pretty poignant.
I mean, you couldn't make that up.
Yeah.
Good times.
So Vivian's definitely a highlight. I go back episode 27, I think, which was one of the series when I did my philosophy, right, my three principles. We did like one episode on each of them.
Yep.
I still think those were the three best episodes we ever did, because we were kind of focused on talking just the philosophical aspects of politics, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, to me, that's always the most rewarding part of these discussions is when we talk about the philosophical aspects. So, So if I had to pick favorite episode, that would be it.
Also, one where you did most of the talking.
Well, I mean, you guys certainly had your say. I mean, I think, and we by no means agreed.
No. I like those too, because those were the ones that made me reconsider all of my positions. Didn't change them, but it made me.
Hey, if you stopped and thought about it, then it was probably worthwhile. Another highlight for me was, and you know, we didn't dwell on this a lot, but we did one episode where we talked about my interview with Larkin Rose. I thought that was pretty good. I've always been a fan of his, and so I enjoyed interviewing him. And then we kind of did an after action review of that interview and dissected it. Actually, I think Rob was absent for that one. I think we had Andrew fill in for you on that one.
Got
guest artist.
Yeah. We've had some really good guests on the show. Jeremy's brother, Rob's brother. If I had had a brother, I'm sure he would have been on the show.
We never did have my crazy best friend's wife, Lefty.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that would have been good.
Our listener, Eric, joined us a couple of times. He always had really good comments to make. AJ was a good guest, and
AJ on Twitter.
Continues to give us good feedback and good comments. Who else?
Oh, the MPP family.
Martin.
Hmm.
Martin Island.
Martin. Oh yeah, Marty. Yeah. Marty leaves some good comments on our Facebook page all the time.
Chuck's good for liking our Facebook.
Yeah. Yeah, we appreciate Chuck's involvement.
Chuck, Bull Buck, Banana Phantom.
Jordan. We had Jordan on a couple of times.
Oh, yeah. I feel like we need some kind of slideshow. You know, that slowly fades in different pictures. Right.
We did some pretty good interviews on the show too.
We had the mayor of what was that little town?
Mayor of
Cool Valley.
No, Gino was his name. Yeah.
I want to say Normandy, but
no, it wasn't
it
Normandy.
It's near, isn't it near Normandy?
Yeah,
Del Park.
No,
it had two words.
Yeah,
see, I got that.
It was something Hills. I can't
not
think
Holly
of it now.
Hills.
That's in South City.
Yeah.
We interviewed
Benita Hills.
No.
Well, we should invite the people who subscribe to send us their reminiscences.
Yeah,
if that's a word.
Right.
Send us what you remember.
Get
or
all
thoughts.
Nostalgic with
Get
them.
Get nostalgic. Put that nostalgia filter on.
We interviewed a candidate for governor, Missouri Libertarian candidate for governor.
We sure did.
We interviewed my friend Christy, who was a delegate to the Democratic National Convention one year. Who else?
Sue Meredith.
Sue Meredith,
already
most recently.
Her.
Keith Hauser had him on a few episodes back. That was a good interview. It's funny, I just discovered that my goddaughter is one of his clients.
How about that?
She's training to go into the Naval Academy.
Oh, wow.
So, I didn't know there was a connection there until after we did the episode.
How about that?
That's all I can think of.
Well,
Rob, did you have a favorite episode?
I did not have a favorite episode. I liked all them.
They all sucked.
They're like my kids. Love them all. Oh, yeah. I don't have a favorite episode. They were all good. Good job, team.
Good job.
Good job, Jerry, leading the show.
Well, Paris, we probably should talk about that.
You
want to
talk about Paris?
I'm
fine with that.
I read a little bit.
Should we do our Irish car bombs before we talk about the terrorist attacks?
Oh my god!
In Paris?
I wasn't gonna go there.
We should do the car bombs on air. All
right. Yeah. Let's
tell me how to do it.
Wait. Set it. Get it into the so it doesn't splash. You just drop it and pound it. Ready?
I think they put too much in here.
I don't know how to do this.
There's a lot of beer.
Drink a beer. All right. Here we go.
Just drop it and drink.
Drop it and chug it.
That's smooth, baby.
Oh, that's good. Jeremy beat me by like half a second.
I'm wearing some of it, though. That was a tough one.
You got some on the shirt pocket there.
Yeah, you got some on the tie. Yeah, Jeremy dressed up.
I think that's a DQ. I think you're in. I think you're first place.
There's more in his glass.
All right.
France.
Yeah, France. Vive la France.
Well, so I'm reading
So before you start, let me just say, I think it's ridiculous that Facebook set up the whole, you know, change your profile picture, you know, superimpose the French flag.
And I
want to
talk more. I want to talk more. All right, now you got me going.
I think that's silly.
It could be the car bomb, but I think there's something. I'm always looking for things that are particularly now, particularly 2015. This particular set of 2015 presidential candidates, I think sucks and is very much a product of our modern era right now. And the way we respond to tragedies is just so rote now.
Yeah.
It's like we somebody makes a logo, somebody makes a hashtag.
There's a ribbon.
There's a ribbon. Exactly. Yeah. 2 days or 3 days after the tragedy, a feel-good story comes out and goes up on Upworthy or something, and everybody clicks it, and we all get to feel good.
Yeah.
You know, remember the Sandy Hook shooting, and there was the teacher who gave her life for her students, and then we got to see retrospectives and fuzzy light. You know, it's all played out, and it's all commerce driven. I mean, you get clicks on that stuff. You get clicks on your little face. I mean, it's Facebook getting clicks. It's all motivated on people pimping their brand, regardless whether it's a good news story or a bad news story. And it's all the more these tragedies come out, you just see it all play out exactly the same way, and it's
the tragedy machine
kicks into action. And
there's a lack of decorum anymore,
right,
with modern, the when you were talking about it's so now,
right. And I will say on the flip side, the optimism at the end here, car bomb kicking in, is like I saw like a rash of these like Syria tutorial videos that came out. I don't know if you've seen those. They're on the Super Facebook.
This is how it happened.
Right, but they're like 5.5 minute videos of like, this is the conflict in Syria. Who's all supporting everything and what all happened? Because it's super complicated, and you read it and you still can't figure it out. And some people are trying to create some videos about what's all going on. Because people don't know people don't really know what ISIS is and where it is and why it's there. And I mean, it's a tough problem to solve. And even the presidential candidates are just like, I'll just bomb them, you know, like bomb what, bomb where, how, you know, it's just a very complicated question. So it's like we have access to more information, but it's difficult. It's hard. So it's much easier to give yourself a tricolor filter on your profile photo and claim you're good.
And what percentage of the people scrolling through Facebook are actually going to stop and watch that video?
Exactly.
And if they do watch it, are they going to care enough to watch the whole thing? Yeah, I mean, I agree; those things are good, but I just think it's a very, very much a niche, market for that kind of stuff. I mean, because I don't know, maybe I'm too pessimistic, but I think.
What?
Like one of our headlines here in the reading room, Ben Carson says many Americans are stupid. I tend to agree with that. Yeah, Ben Carson is right.
Who was it who was crucified for saying that in the previous election? Somebody said that same thing. Did Romney make a reference to that?
Yeah, it was Romney.
Okay. But it's true.
It is true.
And are we finally, has it been said enough that people are finally embracing that and not, somebody doesn't get railroaded for saying it? Or is it because there's still a wide field of candidates and it didn't impact him?
I would like to see more people talk about it because, in my eyes, our democracy doesn't work with all these stupid people.
Yeah.
Right?
I agree.
I mean, they're disengaged, they're misinformed, and they're part of the problem, if not the entire problem. So, I don't know.
Well, back to Paris a little bit.
Yeah.
A couple things. The suicide bombers were remarkably ineffective. Most of the killing came from the guys doing the shooting, which was odd to me. When I read how it played out, it's not what I expected to see. I'm reading a book called See No Evil. Jerry loaned it to me. It started with my interest in the movies Syriana and Charlie Wilson's War, and it kind of plays into that and gives a little backstory on. But in that book, it's apparent that my impression was that, oh man, all these Arab countries, they just hate America, and we're the ones that always get attacked and whatever. No, it's been happening in France, England, other democracies throughout history have been attacked. We just don't hear about it because America doesn't have international news.
Right.
BBC, well, I'm not a huge fan of BBC, but we don't have that equivalent here in America, really. I mean, you watch the nightly news, and there's a little bit, and now it's, you know, Dan Rather reporting from Beirut.
Right.
Okay.
The segment that would normally cover the international news is taken up by sports and entertainment. So.
Yeah, and then the Kardashians release some new photos, and then it torpedoes it.
Right.
And thing. So, but, so, what I took away from that is America is not as unique as we like to think we are.
Yes.
These are happening more, maybe more frequently in other countries. Like, there have been bombings, shootings in Paris. There was that Paris that had subway bombing or tram
that was
bombing.
Spain. That was Spain. And the last France one was the Charlie Hebdo thing.
Right, yeah. Okay.
And before that, it was
before that,
the...
it was London had the buses and the trains that were shot up. And so it's happening in Europe, and it's just not as relevant to us for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Because we're somewhat insulated.
Right.
Well, and even to extend your point, like if ISIS is a problem in France, ISIS is a problem for us. Like, ISIS is a problem for all the Muslims that are in that area, you know?
And
you know, but like, if they go bomb a community and kill 250, like, there's no tricolor flag to put on your Facebook page.
Yeah.
You're like, well that's happening to them. That's just them doing their thing.
So if you look hard enough in the news, you will see that while these attacks were going on in Paris, same thing was happening in Beirut.
Yep, right.
And there was a story about a guy who... there had been one suicide bomber at a mosque that killed, I don't know, 20-some people and injured 40. And he saw a second one running towards the mosque, and this guy tackled the bomber and was killed. He was a father, had a couple kids. But he saved a lot of people. But we're not hearing about that because it's not it's not the story. It's not Paris.
Right.
You know, it's not the elegant city.
Right. It's not the city of lights.
Yes. So there's...
because Beirut has been this giant open-air Nintendo game ever since the 80s, and everybody expects that kind of stuff to go on there.
So we're still being trolled by the media. And we... you would... the impression was, oh, social media, now that's going to change everything.
Right, that's the great equalizer.
That's the great equalizer, and it's not.
And no.
It's not, because we're still being trolled by the media.
Right. Because
media is controlling social media to some extent because they're pushing stories out.
Right.
And
Mark Zuckerberg is telling you what you're going to see.
Yes, they're editing. And now we have the court of public opinion.
Mm.
And it is not, as Jerry said, it's not informed. It is not intelligent. And it's what we thought was going to help is dragging us lower.
Right. And, it, you know, what you see on Facebook is dictated to a large extent by your friends, what they're clicking on like, and, you know, and I mean, let's be honest, some of your friends are stupid, so.
Very selective about who I allow in now.
None of my friends are, I just want to point that out.
No,
but
of course not. Rob's.
Rob's on the other hand.
By the way, Rob is not playing chess this episode, but he's drawing a picture. It looks like something out of the Wizard of Oz.
It's a soul train.
And I drew a soul
train. Where's Don Cornelius when you need
him? That's coming. I'm not wondering when you guys got the fro going.
That was racist as hell. Oh, my gosh. Well.
All right, so...
to wrap up, I don't even know where we are.
I don't either. Anything in the reading room we want to touch on?
The reading room,
for old time's sake?
Briefly before the episode started. There's been a new study about climate change, and NOAA, the NOAA, National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Association, they've released a study, and it says some stuff. And there's a Republican from probably from Texas because they have a lot of oil. he's calling some Senate hearings to discuss their methodology and how they came to these conclusions, and he subpoenaed their emails. They are refusing to submit their emails. I'm very naive, and I thought when you got a subpoena, you had to, okay, I've been subpoenaed by the court or by some kind of governing body. I need to acquiesce to that subpoena. Well, that's not happening. It's also not happening with Hillary Clinton's email server and all her. So what do subpoenas mean anymore? Is it because you are so powerful, or you can just say, nah, I'm not going to do that. And Rob, I'm not saying they shared email. This is an argument subpoenas. This
but
is not,
I
just to clarify
about the attorney-client privilege, or like the reporters and their anonymous sources, right? Because oftentimes they'll say like what was that name? Judith Law, wasn't her name?
But
what
this
was her
is
name?
Not an anonymous source. This is NOAA, who is a federally funded organization.
But I'm giving that as an example of, you know, where they subpoenaed the New York Times reporter's notes of when they talked to whoever this was. Sure. And she's like, right. I'm just not doing it, you know?
Okay.
So
and there are consequences.
I think, right. Well, so my understanding of a subpoena is it comes from a lawyer. Now, a lawyer is an officer of the court, so they do have some authority there. But if you refuse a subpoena, nothing bad is going to happen to you until that lawyer convinces the court to order you to do whatever the subpoena said.
Okay.
And then when you ignore the court's order, that's when you are in contempt and you're at risk of going to prison and whatnot.
So is it general principle to just say, well, I'm in the right here, but I could show them all this stuff, but I don't want to because, hey, I think they're jerks. Or
well,
are you like...
it depends on what you think your legal rights are, right? What if a subpoena came to? What if you're a psychotherapist and a subpoena came to your office about your notes of talking to, you know, whatever this client is? You know, he might feel like, hey, I got this. You know, I know that that's my, you know, therapist client privilege, and I don't have to release it. You can just be like, no, I'm not doing it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe that's
what
they feel. Maybe they feel like they have some right.
If your lawyer's better than their lawyer, you're probably not going to have to respond to a subpoena.
Okay.
But your original point is valid. I mean, if Congress asks an agency of the federal government to provide data for whatever reason, there should be no fuzz on that.
Yeah.
They have to respond to Congress.
And as our last episode to Eric, I say to you, anthropogenic climate change is a farce.
Man, just got to stick your finger in his eye
one last time. I gave it up for a while because it wasn't getting anywhere, but...
All right, well, we haven't gotten any feedback from Eric in a while. Maybe this will prompt him to respond.
I have to do an encore.
So I will call attention to one story here about the headline is unarmed teen flashed his brights at a cop and ended up dead. So I mean this is like a lot of other stories that they seem to be happening with disturbing frequency, but this one in particular I think was bad because. You know, this kid was exercising his rights, and it was clear that he was irritating the cop.
Yep.
What was he exercising?
Well, so the cop pulled him over because the kid flashed his lights at the cop because supposedly the cop didn't have the cop had his brights on, and so the kid was flashing his lights at the cop. Just as a signal, hey, your brights are on.
Right.
Sorry to interrupt, but side note, there is a remarkable number of people who have one headlight out, and so they turn their brights on to compensate for that, and that is not an acceptable workaround.
Right,
get it together, people. Fix
so we've circled back to Ben fine. Carson says many Americans are stupid.
So, back to Jerry.
So anyway, I mean, bottom line,
this traffic stop should not have ended up in the death of this 17-year-old boy. Period. No. Period. No. I mean, that is the bottom line. So however you feel about cops and their authority and whether or not this kid was, deliberately taunting this police officer and he deserved what he got, you cannot tell me that he deserved to die as a result of this this interaction between the two of them. So who's to blame? I don't know. I mean, in this case, I would say that the cop overreacted. I don't, it was clear that this kid was not going to just roll over and do whatever the cop told him to do. And you know, there are plenty of people out there who think that is the proper response, right? That the cop tells you to jump, you say how high.
This was a white.
Right, yeah.
17-year-old,
right,
too.
White kid, white cop. But so there was no racial component to this incident.
So there's a little outrage in the media, by the way.
Yeah. But, you know, I think I tweeted when this story came out that that human dignity is at odds with this notion of just instant compliance with anything a cop tells you to do. Right? Because the cop could tell you to do something completely outrageous.
Yeah.
And I mean, are you supposed to do it? You know, like, the cop tells you to strip down naked so that he can search you.
So there have been incidents of that.
Exactly. There have been plenty of incidents. So do you have no recourse? Are you supposed to just say yes, sir, and do whatever he tells you to do, and then later file a lawsuit against him? I don't want to live in a society where that is the expectation.
And that has been I don't remember who it was who asserted that, but somebody said that very thing. Like, well, you do in this situation, and then later on you file a lawsuit.
You comply, and then you file charges later.
And this circles back around. I lost it. Damn it. Go on, Jerry.
Well, I just circles back around to nothing.
Circles back around to nothing.
So I just wanted to call that story out in the reading room. And then there's one more here that I added recently. Mexico's Supreme Court rules that smoking pot is a fundamental human right.
Sure.
Yeah, so
do we want to take bets on how long before that ruling occurs here in the United States?
Well, we're kind of caught in the crossfire because there's another story about Ireland showing the rest of the world how to end the war on drugs. So we have it to our northeast and our south. I mean, as soon as Canada jumps in, then we're toast.
So is this a trend that we're seeing? That all these other countries are starting to see. I mean, Mexico in particular, right? I mean, Mexico is just this hellscape of violence as a result of our war on drugs, right?
Right.
It really didn't have anything to do with Mexico.
No.
They're just, you know, they've become, they're the crossroads between South America, where all this stuff is coming from,
right,
and where the market is here. And we have a market because we've outlawed all these things and made it so lucrative for these cartels to sell the stuff here.
So Ohio was the last state just recently. And was that voted down? Voted down.
Yeah.
Okay. But still, it's on the ballot.
Yeah. I think it's inevitable.
It's dominoes.
Just like gay marriage. The dominoes have been falling.
Right.
And I think you can expect to see that with certainly with marijuana. And then once that is accepted in all 50 states, then, you know.
I just want it to be legal by the time I retire. I'd like to be 65 and
smoke out.
Smoking
a doobie. Yeah.
I'm totally cool with that.
All right.
But I'm a very straight-laced individual at this time. But hey, I got some years. Come on, young pups. We're counting on you.
So Hostess and Little Debbie are still in business by the time you retire.
That's right. There better be Twinkies.
I think
then.
There's going to be like hover pizzas then.
It's Cheetos.
What's going to happen then? Cheeto Blastos.
We are off the rails.
All right. So I'm calling time on this.
Oh.
Did you have something else?
No. Just shedding a tear. But that doesn't destroy the climate.
So, yeah, I want to give big thanks to all our listeners.
Yeah.
And we appreciate the feedback we've received over the years. It's made the show a lot more fun for us and hopefully a lot more interesting for you to listen to. And you know, we're not going away completely. We're not going to record podcasts for the time being, but you know, we're going to keep the website up. We're going to keep posting crazy stuff on Facebook and Twitter, so
anything I find,
yes,
truth or not, I'm posting it. I've been on fire lately.
We're just going to share every story we see.
Click,
it's
click,
gonna
click.
Be part of our feed now.
We're gonna supplant the Onion.
That's right.
That's my goal.
Yeah. So continue to give us your feedback and comment on the stuff we post, and you know, tell us we're stupid or tell us we're way off base, and you know, we'll continue to ignore those comments.
Here's why you're wrong.
Yeah. So yeah, here we are, the end of an era.
And I have to pee.
Okay.
Me
well,
too.
Thanks for sharing. Well, I guess I can't say see you next time.
Nope.
We'll,
there might be a next time.
There might be a next time. We don't know.
See, a little hiatus.
No, when there's a, let me tell you from experience, when there's a breakup, you need to do it. We don't promise there might be something in the
all
future.
All right. We'll see you on the interwebs.
There you go.
It just hurts people. Good night.
Bye now.